Welcome back to the National Links Trust podcast. In today's episode, we introduce a new National Links Trust ambassador, Epson Tour player Samantha Wagner. Samantha grew up playing public golf and had a successful junior and amateur career before turning pro in 2017. Since then, she's played on the Epson and LPGA tours, and we're really excited to have her as part of our team. Now let's get right into the interview.
Hi, this is Will Smith. Welcome to the NLT podcast. We're excited to have Samantha Wagner join us today. Sam is a professional golfer playing on the Epson and a little bit on the LPGA tours. She is our newest NLT ambassador, so we're really excited to have her join the podcast. So welcome, Sam.
Thanks for having me, Will. I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah, this is great. I'm sure it looks like it's a sunny day out there. I'm sure you'd probably have to be outside grinding on your golf game. But probably need to take a break at some point. So, thank you again.
Yeah, no worries. I'm actually off today. I just finished a tournament up yesterday, so I'm grateful not to be outside.
Awesome. Yeah. So you need a little downtime for sure.
Yeah.
So tell us how you found golf and tell us a little bit about your path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I have an older brother. He's actually played some NLT events in the DC area, and we were very close in age. So when my dad would go to the golf course, he would take my brother, and eventually he started taking me. And I don't think the intent was for me to ever pick up golf right away, but I just kind of wanted to do what my brother did. So I started picking up clubs probably around the age of 3 or 4. I was very young. And growing up in Pennsylvania, just played whatever range or golf course our dad took us to. And eventually I got hooked and played a lot of, U.S. kids and local girls golf program tournaments and everything. And eventually got a little too good too quickly. And I guess that's not an unfortunate thing for me. I can't complain about it. But, I had a coach down here in Florida that strongly suggested moving us down here so we could golf full time. And, that took me pretty high up in the junior ranks into college. And now I'm in my 7th year as a pro. So quick roundup.
What is it, or was it, I guess, is it about the game that you love so much? I mean, obviously you probably at this point come at it from a different perspective than when you were a junior, but what hooked you?
For me, I did play a lot of sports growing up, and I always came back to golf. I don't think there's one thing that I could pin to me being hooked to golf. I just always loved the escape. As a young kid, going to play golf with my brother was always fun. Like we'd always play games with each other. And I love it so much. And even though it's my job now, I think for me, the desire to keep going is to be the best I can be and to be competitive and win. It's not necessarily, it's always about making money at this level, but that's not my main goal. Like, I just want to have fun every day and play the best I can.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, you had a pretty good junior career, ended up playing golf at the University of Florida for 3 years, had a decent amount of success there. Right. Tell us a little bit about your time in Gainesville. I just full disclosure, I went to graduate school at Georgia. So,
it's okay. My brother went to Florida State, so I'm used to the rivalries. I spent 2 years at Florida. I did graduate after my 3rd year in college, but 2 years on the team, and honestly, it's hit or miss. I only looked at Florida, so I had always wanted to go there. Once we moved down here, I was like, I want to be a Gator so bad. I'm not really sure what led me to that choice, but thankfully, they wanted me to, and I had a lot of fun being at Florida. I think, college golf was a lot different than I expected it to be. But I also played some of my best golf at Florida that, like, looking back, like, I feel like when I left, I was like in a weird place where I wasn't necessarily happy with my college experience, but, I look back all the time and I'm like, wow, I played some really good golf. I have 2 school records. I won a tournament, so I feel like in terms of golf, like it was a lot of fun. I do wish sometimes I took a little longer to make a college decision, and not jumped on it my freshman year of high school. But I do think, in the end I would have ended up at Florida just because of where I wanted to be, and being a Gator alumni is something I can cherish forever.
What was different about college golf than what you expected for any of younger listeners who may be
Yeah.
trying to go for college golf and try to play college golf?
You know, I think you're gonna have a different experience at every school because obviously the coaches are different, the locations are different. But for me, I think I really latched on to who the coach was when I committed. It wasn't the coach that I played for. But I feel like I could have done a better job at forging a relationship or really like thinking about what I wanted for myself as the coach relationship, the place I wanted to be, where I could grow my game a little bit more. And I think in when I was, you know, 15-year-old me, I wanted to play for the coach who was there, and I wanted to be an hour and a half from home, and I wanted to be a Gator. Like those were the three things that were important to me, and I didn't really like be a little more introspective, I feel like. When I got there, things were great. I can't really complain about the experience too much, but it is different playing on a team. That's something you're not prepared for, playing, you know, an individual sport for me, it was about 14 years. You know, I played a few like team events, but it wasn't like an every week thing. So that changes things. Having a different practice routine changes things. It's just like all these little minute things you don't really think about until you're actually there and in it. And you're like, oh, this is different. Okay, I need to do this. Or, you know, and then there's the typical college things that you don't prepare for when you're thinking about, oh, I'm going for golf. Like things aren't, I don't know, I'll have a different experience. But, you know, I did the typical college freshman 15, the got depressed, all of those things, and didn't know who to lean on. So I think like, thankfully, I have a good support system around me that I could, you know, snap back really quickly and figure myself out a little bit, but it is hard and it can be very lonely at times, even though you're part of a, you know, 8 to 10 person team.
Well, it looks like from your playing record, you had a really good season over the summer in 2015, I guess, leading into going to
Yeah.
college. You played in the U.S. Women's Am, made it to match play. You qualified for the U.S. Women's Open, so that must have been a pretty good summer.
Yeah. And the US Women's Open was not too far from my hometown. So it was a very exciting lead up to college golf. I think I couldn't have imagined junior golf ending a better way. You know, I kind of finished junior tournaments a little bit more towards the early part of 2015, which was a personal choice. I was kind of just ready to prep for college. But yeah, it was one of my better summers, I'd say. So it was a really, really good exit for me, I'd say, to the next level.
Yeah, and then the year you turned pro, you qualified for the Women's Open, which was at Trump National Bedminster, if I've got that right? And
Yes, it
so,
was.
did you turn pro before that, or were you, or did
Yeah,
you turn pro after? What was your thought process, coming out of, it sounds like you went through college pretty quickly, and what was your thought process turning pro?
so when I guess it's easier to back up. When I committed to college, it was a well-known, you know, discussion that I was going to go to Q school after 2 years for the tour. I went into college with a little bit over a year of schoolwork done. So I was always going to graduate early, and that was the plan. So when year two ended and I finished nationals, I was admittedly in not a great space of wanting to go back to Florida just because year two was very hard on me emotionally. I almost quit golf during my sophomore year, and but I was also simultaneously playing some of the best golf. So after I got home from nationals, I said to my family, like, hey, you know what, if I qualify for the Open, I know we're going to Q school this fall, but if I qualify for the Open, I've got, you know, three other pro tournaments lined up that I gotten a sponsor invite to, so I'm gonna go pro. And my mom was like, she took a big gulp. She was like, okay, are you sure about that?
Yeah.
So we went to my open qualifier in New Jersey. My brother caddied for me, and we spent, you know, the entire day, which is 36 holes, talking about what my pro life would look like. And I hadn't even qualified yet. And I don't know, I, last hole, 36 hole of the day, I made like a 60 footer for birdie, and I ended up winning the qualifier. And I turned to my mom afterwards and I was like, okay, I'm ready to turn pro now. And she's like, can we just wait till tomorrow? So I think I woke her up the next morning at 5 a.m. and I was like, how about now? And she's like, okay. And so I got on the phone with, you know, my coach at Florida, like who I talked to the day before, but, you know, talked about it with her again. And Yeah, I turned pro that next day after the qualifier. So I was a pro for, 2, 3 weeks before the US Open qual or US Open was actually played, and then played an Epson event and the Florida Open, and I believe something else before stage one of Q School.
Describe a little bit to our listeners the life of a young aspiring tour pro fresh out of college. I know the women's game is, I mean, look, I know it's tough throughout, right? But the women's game, there's less resources, there's less money, there's probably less support from equipment manufacturers, all that sort of stuff. So, and I think probably our listeners are more familiar with the men's game. Talk to us just a little bit about that early process.
Well, I moved right back home. The first few years of my life on Epson, because I was on Epson 5 years before I got on a PGA. My family continued supporting me in any way they could. My dad caddies for me full time. My brother would come out every once in a while. My mom, before COVID, just would not come. She'd stay home and keep life running at home. But financially it was hard. Like the first few years, it was hard to get sponsors. Like clubs and stuff, like I feel like the basic stuff, it's when you're on Epson tour, like you can get that. But it's hard to find sponsors like right out the gate. I felt like that was the hardest thing. So a lot of it was, self-funded, family funded for the first few years, especially as I started making money. And then once I got on LPGA, actually a lot of the sponsors I got were relationships I formed in pro-ams and everything while I was on Epson tour, which was really cool. Like it was nice to that like they already knew who I was as a person before they decided to support me in my journey. But it's hard. I mean, even last year on LPGA was hard. I think, you could say it's cheaper than Epson Tour just because, entry fees are less, or, you're flying to places that are a little easier to get to, or all those things. But it's still, I had to fly from Ireland to Vancouver and didn't make money in Ireland and didn't make money in Vancouver. So I think like people envision it as a glamorous lifestyle because of the men, but it is hard. It is work. And I think for women, it's the relationships we build are what help us the most. So I've been super grateful that most of my sponsors are, people that I've met along the way and really enjoyed being with me and wanted to continue to help.
Yeah, you're doing it much more through relationships and personal touches than some manager going out and contacting corporations and all that sort of stuff, right? I mean, it's not only just your play that matters, but it's about, when you're in those pro-ams, you're working hard because you never know when, where the, one of those relationships might lead, right?
The one company that I'm in my second year working with, I met at a pro-am in California 3 years ago, and they really wanted me to get to LPGA, so they said, let's keep talking and get to LPGA. And then the second I did, they were like, yeah, we're in. They just wanted more time. But they love me. I mean, the tournament I met them at, I missed the cut. And they still sent me a message like right after. It was like super fun to be with you, Sam. Like I think that's what's most important. And I think part of the big difference I hear in a lot of pro-ams is like I've played with people who have played in men's pro-ams and women's pro-ams. Like they're like, we get so much time to talk to you guys. It's so different. But I have noticed that the women, it is a thing that women build their relationships more in that way that they could forge them and have sponsorships in the future.
Let's get back to NLT a little bit. You told me we talked briefly that you grew up, as you said, you sort of played wherever you could. I think you said you played at Green Pond up in Pennsylvania. How did that help you sort of get into the game and develop?
Yeah, I mean, it for me, like access, especially as a kid, I think you see it now too. It's really hard for kids to get access on golf courses. And for me, Green Pond was a place that let me and my brother go out all the time. It was a great, course that we could take advantage of in our local town at home. And thankfully, they were super accepting of having kids there all the time. Like it was a great place to grow up and learn. And eventually, like every time I go back to Pennsylvania, I go to Green Pond and check it out. I mean, it feels different in my memory now, but I'm thankful that I had the ability to play there. And a lot of the tournaments, like the girls' golf events I played growing up, were at municipal golf courses that like they wanted kids there. They wanted them playing, which is super great to see and provides a lot of access, I feel like, for kids to continue staying in the game.
I know one of the things that you're passionate about is increasing participation of girls in the game. Your junior record, I could go through it. Jeff very nicely did the research for me, and it's really incredibly accomplished. I think at the time you might have been the second youngest participant ever to qualify for the U.S. Girls USGA Junior Girls Championship at age 11. You know what? Why is it so important that more girls have opportunities in this game for you?
Oh, I think you know, I haven't met a lot of young girls who haven't loved golf, like who have been like, oh no, I don't want to play golf anymore. Like if I, you know, I did a clinic a month ago and all the girls that I was talking to there, they were like, oh, we love golf so much. We want to be just like you. And I remember being like that. Like there was never an instance where when I was, you know, 7, 8, 9, where I was at a golf course, I was like, you know what? I hate this. Like, I think like once you get kids in golf and girls specifically, like they realize how fun it is. And I mean, I do think there is an aspect where young golf for kids needs to be a little bit more group focused. And I feel like there are junior, like PGA Junior League and everything are doing that. So it doesn't feel as lonely. But I feel like the more girls that get involved, it's just going to keep funneling. I think I was at a tournament where Girls Golf Phoenix was there and they were telling me they had just reached like some huge milestone of girls getting involved in the last like 2 years, which has just, it's just awesome to see. Like, I feel like more girls is, it's better for us growing up too, like, or at my level now, like to see more girls coming up, like you want that to continue for years to come.
Yeah. It's something that we're very proud of at NLT that I think in our new beginner golf classes last year, 80% were women. And that was, I think we had over 1,000 new golfers and 80% were women. And it's great to see that the game is resonating with girls and women. And we're you know, honored to be part of that process. So you mentioned the relationship with your brother. You're obviously very close. He's a supporter and has played in a bunch of our events, but you know, why are you a supporter of National Link Trust? Why did this relationship mean something to you? And why are you an NLT ambassador?
Yeah. Well, so my brother played one of the NLT events, like, I want to say mid summer of last year. I think this one started, and he called me up like the next day. He's like, Sam, like you need to figure out a way to be a part of this. And so we talked about it a lot. He told me all about his experience and, you know, and he knows just as well as I, like how we grew up on municipal golf courses and, you know, just how our love for the game. I mean, he doesn't play at a professional level, but I mean, he's really good. So he beats me a lot anyway, and he'll tell that to anyone. But, you know, for him and I to both grow up the way we grew up and have, you know, working parents who made sure we stayed in golf when we wanted to. And part of that was going to municipal golf courses for practice every day. And so when he came to me and said that, I was like, this sounds amazing. Like, I need to talk to whoever I can and find a way that I can support and give back to continue this for years to come for other kids that were like us.
Yeah. Well, we really appreciate your support and being an ambassador. I know, you know, if someone Googles Samantha Wagner, one of the stories that will invariably come up is your Q school veils. You know, tell us a little bit about it, because I think part of the reason why we're excited to have you as an ambassador is you're a person of integrity and honor. And, you know, in this great game of ours, it's so much about those things. Tell someone who might not be familiar about what happened, I guess.
Yeah. So in 2022, it's 2024. I was at Q Series final stage. I just, you know, missed out on getting my full card anyway at the end of the Epson schedule by a few spots on the points list. And so all signs were pointing for, you know, a great week and probably get my card. And first round, sixth hole, I had hit a shot up onto a green on a par five and walked up, and I didn't have my dad caddying for me that week. I had hired a caddy, and he was kind of standing really close to me, waiting for me to hand me his golf, my golf ball. So I had my putter under my arm and my yardage book in my hand. And I just went and picked up my golf ball without putting a mark down. And pretty simple thing. Like I've never done that in my life. And I immediately knew that I had done something wrong, put my ball back down, remarked it, handed it to him. And I was playing in a twosome, and the girl I was playing with was already ready to putt. So I let her putt. I putted, I finished out the hole, and I went up to her and I said, "Hey, Maddie, like, you know, I picked up my golf ball. Pretty sure it's a one stroke, maybe two penalty, but we need to call a rules official." So we called a rules official. He came up to us on the next tee, and I don't know if it was fortunate or unfortunately for me, it was one of my favorite rules officials that came up to me, and he's like, "Oh, Sam, what did you do?" And I said, "You know, Peter, I picked up my golf ball, and, you know, I immediately put it back down and remarked it, but I feel like this is a penalty." And he's like, "Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's one." And he called in and they confirmed it was all one stroke penalty. And it's like, all right. So it ended up being a bogey on that hole. And, you know, I was pretty like brain fogged after that, I feel like, for the next few holes, kind of just like, what did I just do? And finished the round, and he came and found me in the lunchroom afterwards. And he was like, "Sam, I really hope that shot doesn't cost you anything." And so we played, I was like, "Yeah, me too." Played three more rounds, and they had a cut. Q series at the time was 8 rounds. So we had a cut after 4 rounds, and ended up missing the cut by a shot. Jeez. I think I was like even or one under or something like that for 4 rounds and missed the cut by a shot. And, you know, I think in the immediate aftermath, it was just like a state of shock, like that, like I had missed the cut just because of that one thing. But I feel like it went away very quickly. And I was like, you know what? Okay, I'm on Epson next year, but I'm proud of myself for doing the exact thing I was raised to do. You know, it wasn't even a question. Like I knew right away, like no one had seen it. Maddie hadn't seen it. My caddy told me he never even saw it. My mom was off by the green. She didn't even see it. Like no one knew what had happened. And you know, I even had a couple people say to me, like, why did you say anything if no one saw it? And I'm like, I didn't want to make it to the tour and be like, yeah, I know I did something wrong on the way to getting that card. And like, none of that, like in the 5 seconds it happened, I was like, I'm saying something right away. Like it wasn't even a question. So I knew, in a way, I feel like I kind of knew I would end up back at Q Series the next year. And I'm not kidding, I walked to every green those 8 rounds with a ball mark in my hand. And that was the first thing I did. You know, I didn't talk about it for a year. I like people knew, but it was just something I was like, you know, this is part of my journey. And but I stuck with who I am as an individual. And I'm more proud of that than any other outcome could have been.
Yeah. And the next year you were back at Q Series and you made it through, and you played in 23 on the LPGA, played in the KPMG Women's PGA at Baltusrol. Mm-hmm. I'm sure the year wasn't the year that you had hoped for, but I'm sure it was great to be up there, and I'm probably working harder than ever to get back. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was, I feel like, wasn't quite what I expected. It was a lot, like I always knew the LPGA would be difficult, but it was a lot more difficult than I could have ever imagined. And I think, you know, I look back and I know I played really well last year, but a lot of things were, you know, I missed a cut by a shot here or there. I missed a lot of birdie putts. Like you can do the what ifs and everything, but like, I think all in all, I played really strong and confident most of the year, especially when, you know, kind of get thrown in as a rookie, at least last year, how the schedule lined up that you had to make cuts really early, really quickly to move up the points list. And it took me a little longer than expected to get settled in, which is okay. And just was harder in the end. And I had to go back to Q Series again this year, and I missed the cut by a shot, thankfully not for any rules infractions, but I did miss the cut by a shot again this year, but yeah. It's okay.
So you're back on Epson, mm-hmm. and you're working your way back, hopefully mm-hmm. to the PGA Tour. So for any listener out there who wants to follow Sam, look up the scores on the Epson Tour. And, you know, I know I'll be following along. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. We really appreciate your time. And we appreciate your support of National Links Trust. And if anyone gets out to an Epson Tour event, say hi to Sam. She's going to have the NLT logo on her bag. So it's been a real pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Will.